Listen here, and I do hope you listen here. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Wednesday, January the 23rd, and all ears and eyes are trained on hearings today in Congress, where soon-to-be former State Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton just wound up her morning date with the Senate committee, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, hearing her take on what happened in Benghazi and to ask her questions. And then at 2 o'clock today, the House Foreign Affairs Committee takes over. Well, very interesting things have happened. We'll get to that in a minute, but I wanted to just give you, set this up for you. Of course, you know that Hillary Rodham Clinton should have been available, should have made herself available to this committee, but more than a month ago, and became ill. The explanation was that she had a stomach flu, and then right after that, allegedly, of course, she was afflicted with this blood clot in her head and needed special treatment for that, but she is back and appears, from what I saw today, in fine form. In fact, Senator John McCain said that he noted that she looked fine and was her usually combative, he used that word, combative self. Well, so far, you can tell that this is a political division because both parties and their emissaries in the Senate seem to have been schooled on how exactly to treat the witness. The Democrats were to protect her at all costs and to shore up some of the important things that she wants to get done or to take the thrust of the hearing in a particular direction. And similarly with the Republicans, it seemed to be the uniform thinking, at least from the nature of the questioning that I've observed, that they were to press the witness for specifics about who knew what and when and how much did each person in authority know, and particularly her. So it got a bit contentious. But we'll come back to that. I just want to let you hear one of the rough spots today. And the rough spot comes from the interchange between Clinton and Senator Ron Johnson, of course, Republican, from Wisconsin. You'll only hear from the Republicans because they were the ones agitating here, and you will hear the nature of that exchange.
Mr. Chairman and Madam Secretary, I'd like to join my colleagues in thanking you for your service sincerely, and also appreciate the fact that you're here testifying and glad that you're looking in good health.
Thank you.
Were you fully aware in real time? Again, I realize how big your job is and everything was erupting in the Middle East this time. Were you fully aware of these 20 incidents that were reported in the ARB in real time?
I was aware of the ones that were brought to my attention. They were part of our ongoing discussion about the deteriorating threat environment in eastern Libya. We certainly were very conscious of them. I was assured by our security professionals that repairs were underway, additional security upgrades in place.
Thank you. Did you see personally the cable on, I believe it was August 12th, specifically asking for basically reinforcements for the security detail that was going to be evacuating or leaving in August? Did you see that personally?
No, sir.
Okay. When you read the ARB, it strikes me as how certain the people were that the attack started at 9:40 Benghazi time. When was the first time you spoke to, or have you ever spoken to, the returnees, the evacuees? Did you personally speak to those folks?
I've spoken to one of them, but I waited until after the ARB had done its investigation because I did not want there to be anybody raising any issue that I had spoken to anyone before the ARB conducted its investigation.
How many people were evacuated from Libya?
The numbers are a little bit hard to pin down because of our other friends, approximately 25 to 30.
Did anybody in the State Department talk to those folks very shortly afterwards?
There was discussion going on afterwards, but once the investigation started, the FBI spoke to them before we spoke to them. And so other than our people in Tripoli, which I think you're talking about Washington, right?
Yeah, the point I'm making is a very simple phone call to these individuals, I think, would have ascertained immediately that there was no protest prior to this. I mean, this attack started at 9:40 p.m. Benghazi time, and it was an assault. And I appreciate the fact that you called it an assault. But, I mean, I'm going back to then Ambassador Rice 5 days later going to Sunday shows and what I would say purposefully misleading the American public.
Well,
why wasn't that known? And, again, I appreciate the fact of the transparency of this hearing, but why weren't we transparent at that point in time?
Well, first of all, Senator, I would say that once the assault happened and once we got our people rescued and out, our most immediate concern was, number one, taking care of their injuries. As I said, I still have a DS agent at Walter Reed seriously injured. Getting them into Frankfurt, Ramstein to get taken care of. The FBI going over immediately to start talking to them. We did not think it was appropriate for us to talk to them before the FBI conducted their interviews. So, and we did not, I think this is accurate, sir, I certainly did not know of any reports that contradicted the IC talking points at the time that Ambassador Rice went on the TV shows. And, you know, I just want to say that, you know, people have accused Ambassador Rice and the administration of, you know, misleading Americans. I can say, trying to be in the middle of this and understanding what was going on, nothing could be further from the truth. Was information developing? Was the situation fluid? Would we reach conclusions later that weren't reached initially?
Madam Secretary, do you disagree with me that a simple phone call to those evacuees to determine what happened wouldn't have ascertained immediately that there was no protest? I mean, that was a piece of information that could have been easily obtained.
Well, but Senator,
within hours, if not days.
Senator, when you're in these positions, the last thing you want to do is interfere with any other process.
Well,
it's the fact. Number two, I would recommend highly you read both what the ARB said about it and the classified ARB, because even today there are questions being raised. Now, we have no doubt they were terrorists, they were militants, they attacked us, they killed our people. But what was going on and why they were doing what they were doing?
We were misled that there were supposedly protests and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But the American
people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator. Now, honestly, I will do my best to answer your questions about this, but the fact is that people were trying in real time to get to the best information. The IC has a process, I understand, going with the other committees to explain how these talking points came out. But, you know, to be clear, it is, from my perspective, less important today, looking backwards, as to why these militants decided they did it than to find them and bring them to justice. And then maybe we'll figure out what was going on in the meantime.
Okay, thank you, Madam Secretary.
Senator Shaheen.
Wow. Well, what do you think about that?
I'm saying, hey, this is a State Department function. Are they throwing you under the bus?
Oh, of course not. You know, look, I take responsibility. I'm in charge of the State Department, 60,000 plus people all over the world, 275 posts. The president and the vice president certainly wouldn't be knowledgeable about specific decisions that are made by security professionals. They're the ones who weigh all of the threats and the risks and the needs and make a considered decision.
Intelligence community initially called it a protest. State Department never did. You never did. The story has changed now. And as you know, Republicans are charging that this was a cover-up. Was it a rush to judgment, or was it bad intelligence, as Vice President Biden suggests?
You know, Elise, I take a very different view of this. I have now for 20 years been very much in the administration decision-making, first with my husband, then after 9/11, working with President Bush, now, of course, in President Obama's cabinet. In the wake of an attack like this, in the fog of war, there's always going to be confusion. And I think it is absolutely fair to say that everyone had the same intelligence. Everyone who spoke...
Bad intelligence,
well,
it seems,
everyone
though.
Who spoke tried to give the information that they had. As time has gone on, the information has changed. We've gotten more detail. But that's not surprising. That always happens. And what I want to avoid is some kind of political gotcha or blame game going on, because that does a disservice to the thousands and thousands of Americans, not only in the State Department and USAID, but in the military, who serve around the world. Everyone wants to make sure they are as safe as possible, but they are doing the job that they were sent out to do.
Well, Ambassador Stevens' father this week said his death is being politicized. Democrats are calling it a witch hunt. Is that what's happening here?
Well, I'm not going to get into the political back and forth. I know that we're very close to an election. I want just to take a step back here and say, from my own experience, we are at our best as Americans when we pull together. I've done it with
we're not
Democratic
that?
Presidents and Republican presidents. I've seen it happen where people say, look, first and foremost, we're Americans. We've lost four brave men. Dozens more had to fight for their lives over a very long battle. They had to get evacuated because of the dangers that they were facing.
Well, I mean, we have an election coming up. Rationale is that this is to go against President Obama. But some people think it's to stop Hillary Clinton from making any gains for 2016.
You know, that is just so far from anything that anybody should be thinking about.
They still see you as a threat, Secretary Clinton.
Well, I can't speak to that. The only threats I'm worried about are the threats to my men and women on the ground every day as we speak. It's what I'm obsessed with. It's what we've worked so hard to evaluate. And, of course, we're part of a team. We're a team with DOD. We're a team with the intelligence community. We're a team with the White House and other assets of the government.
Going to watch the debate?
I am. We're going to try to get home in time to be sure that I see every minute of it.
You've debated President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You've watched many debates. What does he need to do in this debate?
He just needs to be himself and answer the questions and get out there and tell people, not just those in the audience, but in our country, what he has done and what he will do. I think that this is a...
Well, you listened first to a tape, a clip of today's hearing between Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, and you can tell how heated it got at that moment, and it showed something about Hillary Rodham Clinton that also was I think, strengthened by a previous interview that she had with CNN foreign correspondent when she was in Peru, as a matter of fact. She was interviewed by CNN's Elise Labbott, and they talked about the, you know, what did Clinton know? When did she know it? How come at that stage they were still unclear as to what had happened in Benghazi? Okay. We have hearings. They've had hearings before, and an independent counsel, an independent group, was put together to probe the Benghazi attack and came back with about 29 suggestions. But they didn't find any particular person to blame. They didn't lob charges at any one person within the State Department. They just said that there was, in effect, a systemic breakdown that led to the death of Ambassador Stevens and to three other Americans at the consulate there in Benghazi. And in effect, what happened was this investigation became a matter of administrative review, procedural review. What happened to the system within the State Department that allowed this incredible attack to take place without any cogent response that ended up, of course, costing the lives of four Americans, including the ambassador? What was it that failed? Not who, but what? Hillary Clinton herself had said that she accepted responsibility. And immediately after she said that, the president, none other than the president, said, oh, no, she's not responsible. We have to take a look at this. There's got to be something else responsible. Well, we will find out when this meeting is over today at 2 o'clock. It begins. On the House side, by tomorrow, of course, we'll give you a full panoramic view of what happened. But so far, the marching orders are very clear. In the Senate, where the Democrats have the majority, the important task for all of the Democratic members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is to basically block Hillary Clinton and make her appearance there as easy as possible. They don't want any nasty stuff, no dust being raised at this point, since she is about ready to make her exit. So their job is to just congratulate her, and they did a lovely job of it. All of the Democrats were praising her and just say what a great job she had done. How highly respected she is in the international arena, how highly she's respected in the Senate and in the House and among the American people. And they just lathered her up with compliments about how great a job she has done. The Republicans had as their marching orders to nail Clinton down on the central questions that they have and still do have, which is, one, did the United States, and specifically, did she, as Secretary of State, have an appreciation before the September 11th attack on the consulate in Benghazi? Did she have an appreciation for the fact that there were concerns about the safety of all diplomatic personnel there? She said she never saw a memo, not even the one sent by Ambassador Stevens himself, being concerned about the lack of security at the Benghazi mission. So she says she does not know anything about that. She never saw anything like that. They want to know, and they want to nail her down on, when was it determined that, in fact, it was a terrorist attack? And we see Clinton, and we're going to get to this. You'll hear the tapes. We're going to do a full report tomorrow. This is just, we're hearing part one already. We're going to hear part two later on today. It would happen exactly at the time that this particular show ends. And, you know, the House will continue what the Senate left off this morning. But today would be her only day to testify. And I'm just breaking it down to give you a sense of what the state of play is. Hillary Clinton's job before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and before the House Foreign Affairs Committee this afternoon, her job is to remain authoritative, calm, assertive. And one more thing that she has to do before she leaves is to champion the cause of the State Department for more money. She wants quite a bit of money allocated to the State Department so as to beef up the diplomatic installations, U.S. diplomatic installations all around the world, and internally to put in place some of the checks and balances that the independent committee assigned to investigate the attack on Benghazi had recommended. And she's doing a splendid job. I mean, having herself been deposed many times in connection with criminal matters, she has a handle on how to handle these kinds of uncomfortable situations. So she's quite comfortable being peppered with questions. And I strongly suspect that in the time of her absence, she was doing a great deal of brushing up on what position she is to take, what she's to say, how to prepare for these congressional hearings today. So she's doing a very good job so far of maintaining her composure, but doing something else. She is not really answering questions about the details of as they relate to intelligence. She's discussing this issue in her head, as she just, you know, she just heard her say to Senator Johnson, what difference does it make now? We have four dead Americans. I mean, what is the point of going over this thing? The people are dead already. What we need to do is to get over it. Get over it, and let's talk about procedures that we could put in place so that it doesn't happen again. Which is remarkable when you think about it. Because the idea that the Republicans have is to get at the root of what exactly was it? How culpable is the United States via the U.S. State Department? To what degree is the United States government culpable in the deaths of four of its citizens? That is really the issue. She has already turned this thing around into a matter for procedural review, administrative review. The Accountability Review Board, or the ARB as they call it, had taken a similar tact. They're not interested. They were not there to find out anybody's potential criminality or lack of judgment. They're not pinning blame on anyone. They're there strictly to review the process. So Clinton is keeping the ball in the arena of process. She's willing to answer their questions, but all of her answers have to do with process. She's not sharing any new information necessarily, and she is not at all going to place herself in the arena where the Republicans want her. And where they want her is to explain on the inside how under her watch, how the Obama administration handled the things that we don't normally see. The Republicans are interested in the nuts and bolts of her diplomacy, and she's not about to hand them any of that. She's not about to share that with them. because the question was raised by Senator Rand Paul as to whether she was ever told that the diplomatic mission in Benghazi was a transshipment point for arms raided from Libya to be shipped to Turkey, to rebels in Turkey. She is not venturing into the world of intelligence at all. And in fact, that is exactly where the answers lie, because we know now, we had a guest just yesterday talk about Mali and the fact that Libyans, the Islamist Libyans, who were very much working along with Gaddafi, had fled to Mali and were using the northern region of Mali, along with other Islamists, to prepare for their terrorist attacks wherever they chose to launch them. And our reporter yesterday, Gilbert Bessier, said that the United States actually created the situation, not only in Mali, but you can see the connection between the U.S. Bringing down of the Gaddafi regime, because that, in fact, was why Ambassador Stevens was dispatched there. That was his job. His mission was to work with the so-called rebels, the anti-Gaddafi forces in Libya, to find a way to boost their efforts to cause the downfall of Muammar Gaddafi from the inside. That was his job. Now, they're not going to say that, but that was his job. That was his mission. And the so-called protest, which became, as Clinton then later described it, as an armed attack, an attack by armed militants. These militants were pro-Gaddafi militants, if you want to call them that. These were pro-Gaddafi forces. And they attacked the embassy because, from their own intelligence, there are reports that have said this, the intention really was to kidnap the ambassador, but it became a long and sustained fight. So, in a way, again, the United States was responsible in so many ways of creating the situation that caused the death of the ambassador and three other people. That is the issue. The ambassador's job was to recruit or to cultivate a relationship with anti-Gaddafi forces within Libya. So after the fall of Gaddafi, then you had those forces still there. And understandably, they would have known or would have strongly suspected that the United States had a hand in this. And therefore, with that knowledge, it was the job of the State Department to secure, to make even more sure, because there were other attacks on other embassies in the days preceding the attack on the U.S. Diplomatic compound. That's not where they're going to go. That's where the Republicans want to go. That's not where Clinton is going to go. We'll take this break, come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888, right after this. This is Lead Stories. I'm Patrice Lead. And we're talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton's testimony today before two different committees, one in the Senate and one in the House, both of them looking at the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. We're joined by Rudy from Montreal. Hello, Rudy. You're on the air.
Hello, Yutris. You took away a bit of my fire here, because if you have a civil war, governments do one of two things. They either close down the embassy or they strengthen it. And the answer she gave regarding whether she saw the telegram reminds me of another answer somebody else gave. I never had sex with that woman. It depend on the word definition of sex.
Or it depends on what is, yes. I remember that person. But she was co-president, I think, at that time.
Exactly. And I wonder if somebody has stomach flu and falls and somehow hits their head. I wonder if that's a good reason to have a selective amnesia in the questions that they answer.
Well, you know, I did read some time ago a story that appeared on a couple of websites saying that there was this report that Hillary Clinton, at the time that she just fell ill with the flu, around that time, was out of sight, that this was just a report. There's no way that I have of confirming it, but it's just interesting that it has popped up on websites that usually monitor intelligence issues. And the report consistently said that Hillary Rodham Clinton was, in fact, injured on a secret trip to discuss the nuclear situation in Iran with President Ahmadinejad, and that en route, the plane that she was in encountered some kind of mechanical problem and had a very, very rough landing in which either people were either hurt or there might have even been a fatality. That was the report that came on these websites that I read. But there's no way of say whether it's true or not. I mean, I've been trying to find some kind of way of confirming these reports, but I have not been able to confirm them so far. But the report that she was supposedly on a plane dispatched by President Obama to meet secretly with Ahmadinejad to discuss the escalation of nuclear enrichment programs in Iran. So I don't know how true that is. We'll see. I've been following it, but I haven't seen anything later than the date that I checked.
Well, I thank you very, very much, and I appreciated also your radio station. It's excellent, and I really appreciated that interview you had with, I believe his name is Yanis, the economist from Greece. I was really impressed with his answers, and I've followed through and listened to the entire interview, and I was really amazed. It changed my idea of how economies could work if people were not so greedy to acquire so much of the pie for themselves. It would be a far better world.
Thank you so much, Rudy. Good
you're
to hear
welcome,
from you.
Yours.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hello, you're on the air, Michael from New Jersey.
Oh, hi, Yutri. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
I agree there's so much not being said. It's more important what's not being said in these hearings than what is. But I disagree with one point with you, perhaps, and that is I think that both sides of the political aisle know all the ground rules, and both sides won't ask certain questions.
I agree. I don't disagree with that. I agree with you completely.
I think the leaders of both parties who are on the Committee of Foreign Affairs, etc., know exactly what's happening over there. because I think it's a major non-transparent for the American public, a major foreign policy initiative broad that goes all the way across North Africa that is that is being pursued by the U.S., but no public access. No, we're not available to any of the information or the intelligence. When I saw the diagram in the New York Times of the annex and CIA, SEALs, special forces, everything that was around that situation in Benghazi, it screamed of intelligence and a major initiative intelligence operation that was in gear there. And I don't think either party is going to go near that. And what we're privy to is merely a covering of petty political pitter-patter that mm-hmm. is thrust in our faces as the important thing to consider here. And we'll see it again on CNBC and Fox, and they'll pitter-patter about, you know, what she knew and what they knew and this and that. But it has no bearing, considering there's probably something that is a major operation across northern Africa in all of these countries that we know nothing about. There's no debate about it, and we have no idea of what's going on there. And they won't let us know either. So I think it's like a little sensing operation they're watching.
You're absolutely correct on that because, of course, both sides do know what they're doing is trying to, you know, send signals to each other that we're prepared to play hardball here. We ruffle her feathers a little bit, but it is an indication. It is really to indicate to President Obama, not so much to Clinton, because I think both sides agreed, all right, she's going and, you know, let her go her way and that's done. But really, they're taking jabs at her to really remind President Obama that he still has to come through them to get all of his nominees for the cabinet confirmed. And they're also following through, I think, on a sincere level, to the extent that politicians can be sincere. They really do take umbrage, the Republicans do, that the administration has not provided answers, or the answers that they have provided are just insulting to the intelligence of people. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Too many questions are out here. You know, so if the administration were at least smart enough or savvy enough to put together a cogent front, you know, they might have been inclined to let it pass. But it was just so glaring and just so stupid and so, you know, it's just so childish. This was just like real amateur behavior on the part of, you know, the administration, where it couldn't get its lies straight.
Yes, but don't you also get the feeling that both parties know that there's areas they can't touch upon?
They know it. Of course they do.
Regarding the CIA and what's really happening, you know, clandestinely, that we'll never know about, and they know about it, but they're not allowed to cover any of those grounds, ask any questions, and they I'm sure they have, you know, strict orders to go here and not there.
Well, of course, I listened today, and Hillary Clinton says in just a passive phrase that, you know, she's warning now because she's leaving her final gift to the Senate and the House that they better do something about funding the department appropriately, because Africa is going to be the next theater of war for the United States as it pursues the Islamists there. And essentially, you can see the connections between things, you know. This business in Libya was really huge, and the way it was handled, the brutal assassination of Muammar Gaddafi, whatever people want to think of him, the fact is that he was a marked man, and the brutal way in which he was just murdered, assassinated, It caused a great deal of backlash and intense animosity toward the United States. And it is silly to think that people will not want retribution. The United States wants retribution for 9/11. It wants retribution for the death of Ambassador Stevens. This is how countries typically behave. But why it is that there's this assumption that only the United States should have these intense feelings when these kinds of things happen. When your head of state is killed the way he is, and we know, we understand already, there are about five levels of things happening that we don't see for every level that we do see. But this is what our legacy is when the United States conducts these kinds of underhanded internecine warfare and, still stands on moral high ground that, the rest of the world ought to be, democratic and moral and just. It's a sad commentary that they think people are that simplistic these days that they can't just put these two things together. But thank you very much, Michael, for calling. 888-874-4888. This is interesting. You would want to take a look, of course, tonight on the news. You would see something of a summary if you're not following it as it is being streamed live. But we will return to this tomorrow and get a very comprehensive view of what we saw, what's unfolded. Now, here are some of the things we do know. Hillary Clinton is going to be leaving the administration. She leaves the administration on a very, very high note. She has a 67%, I think, popularity rate. And a new poll today shows she's even more popular than Joe Biden, the vice president. So that's good currency should she desire to pursue a presidential run in 2016. But even if she doesn't, she leaves on a high note, and that assures her of a whole bunch of things that, and a bunch of options that she can exercise that are money-making and that, are history-making as well. So she has every interest in leaving on a high note. Interestingly, she has given her endorsement, as it were, of John Kerry, who is President Obama's nod to succeed her. And this is how politics is done. By the time she leaves, the Clintons would have had a tamper-proof system to assure them intimate access to the Obama administration. They would have intimate access at the Treasury, because the appointee there or the nominee there is a Clintonite, and in so many other areas where, because most of the people in Obama's cabinet are Clintonites, and he is apparently a clone of the Clintonites, a clone of Clinton. So there's going to be a lot of authority that Hillary would exercise and Bill Clinton would exercise, even though they're not elected officials. They have intimate access to the Obama administration and all the departments now, so she would have seen that process through. When you are knowledgeable about the State Department and you have your people that you've appointed in there that you personally promoted and hired and appointed, you can afford, as Bill Clinton now does, traveling the world as a kind of consultant on global issues. You would be able to monetize these connections. When you have intimate knowledge of how the Treasury might be leaning on, say, interest rates, that comes in handy if you are in the business of investing and wanting to grow your portfolio in a hurry. When your appointees are in the healthcare arena and you have practically authored the healthcare bill, you know exactly how to manipulate that as a consultant. So this is what they are spending the time shaping, the connections, so that after Hillary leaves, the connections afford the Clintons both access and the ability to monetize those connections. That's how it's working. It's a cynical view of politics, but that's how that's their brand. That's their branding. That's the way they have conducted business in public life from day one. So the homework assignment, because we'll be debating tomorrow, the homework assignment is to take a look at Hillary Clinton's testimony before this afternoon at 2 o'clock, the House Foreign Affairs Committee. If you have an opportunity to scan what she said before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, also do that, because we're going to get down and dirty with Hillary Clinton tomorrow. Until then, thank you so much for joining me today. Coming up next is Jack Rasmus with Alternative Visions. And if you want to continue the conversation with me, you can do so at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D, Stories, at gmail.com. One thing I have to confess, there was a person who wrote me. He was a veteran. If you're listening today, a veteran from Oregon. Now, I retrieved your email, and I have no idea what I did. I didn't think I did anything, but it just vanished from the screen, and I don't know where it went. I've searched all through my emails. I cannot find your email. So if you are the veteran who wrote me from Oregon, please do send me your email again. I must have screwed up really badly, and it just disappeared. I felt so awful because I hunted for it and couldn't find it. All right, so thank you so much, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Please do pass the word. Let folks know about PRN.FM, and let them know about Lead Stories, too. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you.